a lot of jobs were shrinking. A lot of people were cutting jobs. I sat down with my wife and I said, I don't think there's going to be a chair for me at the end of the day. Then it was, what do I do? Do I go find another job? Do I go sell real estate? That was tough to swallow at the time because I thought that I was at the pinnacle of my career. I had done a lot of really good work at a lot of different places, including Sports Illustrated. I was way too young to be doing something else, something that I thought I was among the best in the country at. Somebody actually on Twitter said, you should look into this model that they started in Pittsburgh. It's a website called DK Pittsburgh Sports. They had started a subscription model. Talked to DK, Dejan Kovacevic, out in Pittsburgh a lot. Talked it over with my wife, put together a business plan. Mind you, I have no business training whatsoever. All my training is in journalism and athletics. We thought that model could work in Boston, and we're still standing 7 years later.
Welcome. I am your host, Dino Cattaneo, and you're listening to Authentic Leadership for Everyday People, the podcast where we investigate the connection between effective leadership and authenticity. If you're looking for inspiration and tips on how to become a better leader by being your true self, you're in the right place. Last week, we talked about how to build and manage successful co-founder relationships with Andy Garofalo, founder of Confidant and host of the podcast, How I Found My Co-Founder. Before I introduce today's guest, allow me a short digression. The core theme of this podcast is that when you are clear about your values and goals and are disciplined about making decisions that are consistent with your values and goals, you're not just happier, but also more effective. We also often talk to our guests about their definition of success. And guess what? Not everyone defines success as massive financial outcomes or building large companies. Our guest today is a great example of that. Greg Bedard is no doubt one of the top football journalists in the country. Like many, many others in that profession, he got caught in the shrinking of the industry as newspapers got replaced by the internet. Rather than giving up on what he was doing, he chose a unique entrepreneurial path and launched a specialized website, Boston Sports Journal, or BSJ, making choices that at the time were not in line with where online media was going. When I say that Greg is one of the top football journalists in the country, I say it with conviction. You will hear me say this during the show as well, and this will give me away as someone who is a little older. I grew up reading newspapers, and I've always looked for the signatures at the end of the articles. I found the journalists that I liked, and then I followed them and searched their articles. I have read Greg for many years, since he started covering the New England Patriots, and I followed him to read him as he moved outlets. And I am now an avid reader and a subscriber to BSJ. But I love this interview not just because I got to interview someone I'm a big fan of. This is one of the most honest interviews I ever did. Greg did not shy away from the challenges he faced. He says one of his foundational values is to be tough but fair. And you will hear this in spades through this conversation. You will also hear the genuine passion he has for his work and for serving the people who depend on him as readers and employees. And that is what makes a great leader. Last, but definitely not least, I did things a little differently for this episode. I could not have Greg Bedard on the other side of the microphone and not talk about football. So, at the end, instead of the usual three personal questions, I did a segment that is inspired by 10 Questions with Bedard, a very popular segment that he does on the Felger and Mez sport radio show in Boston. I asked him 6 hypothetical questions on football events from the past 20, 25 years. We had a lot of fun doing it, so make sure that you listen to the whole podcast to enjoy them. Greg, why don't you introduce yourself to my listeners, and you can take as little or as much time as you want.
This is Greg Bedard. I am the founder, editorial director, Patriots columnist, basically do everything at BostonSportsJournal.com. I have been a journalist since I got out of school in 1997. I have been covering the National Football League full-time since 2004. So this will be my 20th season coming up. I did a little bit more before that, but not in a full-time capacity. I own a small company. We have 3 full-time employees, a bunch more who do things on a per diem basis, contractual basis, and things like that. And we cover all 4 major sports in Boston, with the Patriots being our primary focus.
The reason why I asked you to be on the podcast is because it's not very common for journalists, especially for somebody who has spent the time that you have spent and had a career progression like the one you had, to go and start their own business. What was the driver when you decided to start the Boston Sports Journal?
The driver? Desperation. This was not the plan at all. Long story short, I had methodically built my career from the ground up, basically. People, especially the younger listeners and viewers to this, won't really understand this. First of all, they probably barely even see newspapers now. But there's a section in the back of back in the day when you used to have a full sports section with the standings, odds, parimutuel results, stuff like that. That's called an agate page. And it's a smaller type. And so I started as an agate clerk at the Palm Beach Post. I studied journalism at Rutgers University. I was in the baseball program for a couple of years to earn a spot on the varsity my sophomore year. And then I suffered a freak hand injury. And that's when I just decided, do I want to keep playing baseball? And I had always had my eye on the student newspaper at Rutgers, that was something that I wanted to get into. And I was majoring in journalism. And so that's what I did. I walked into the student newspaper. But out of school, I just got a foot in the door as an agate clerk at the Palm Beach Post, which is basically putting the standings together. And you take a lot of high school sports calls and local sports calls and things like that. You basically pick up the phone in the sports department. And that's the way I started. And any writing opportunities I got at the Palm Beach Post, and back then, Palm Beach Post is a lot smaller now, but back then in the late 90s, the Palm Beach Post had a lot of money behind it. All three South Florida newspapers, Palm Beach Post, the Miami Herald, South Florida Sun Sentinel, there was a ton of money and they had huge sports sections and very powerful sports sections that won awards because of there was so much building. There was so much real estate advertising and things like that for the newspaper. So they had very robust sports departments back then. And it was a great breeding ground. A ton of people have come out of the Palm Beach Post and I wrote every opportunity I could get and slowly made my way up to the main sports section thanks to the 2003 East Boynton Beach Little League All-Star team, which went all the way to the Little League World Series championship game against Japan, won the national championship. I was the beat writer on that. I was with them the whole time. That was my big break. 11 and 12-year-olds, you would never think that, but that was my big break. Then I got hired on in the main sports section, did a whole bunch of things, mostly high schools, but I would do Florida Marlins, Miami Dolphins, anything. Golf events, all that stuff. Shortly thereafter, they called me into the office. They said, we want you to be the backup Dolphins writer. I thought that they were going to tell me that they were going to have me be the backup Marlins writer, which I was horrified about because it's extremely difficult to have a functional family life as a baseball reporter with so many games and spring training and all that stuff. I covered the Miami Dolphins, rose through the ranks there, broke a lot of stories. I covered Nick Saban with the Miami Dolphins. I broke up a ton of stories on him leaving for the University of Alabama. From there, I went to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a state I had never been before, to cover the Green Bay Packers. That turned out to be Brett Favre's final season in Green Bay, so very memorable and historic. I covered the beginning of Aaron Rodgers. And then I got the opportunity to come to the Boston Globe, which Massachusetts is home for me, as the NFL writer for the Boston Globe. And I was there, I think, about 3.5 years. And then I got a big opportunity. Peter King called me up, asked me to pick him up at the Providence train station. He had a speaking engagement, and he said that he had the opportunity to put together his own team covering the NFL, and I was his number one draft choice in the country. And so that was a great opportunity. It was a lot more money. Unfortunately, it did not work out. I got laid off after 3 years there, along with a lot of other people. And at that time, so this would have been 2017. At that time, I got laid off. I called around. I called everybody under the sun, including the Patriots, including Bill Belichick, including every single newspaper I could think of, and NFL.com and online outlets and all that stuff. A lot of jobs were shrinking. A lot of people were cutting jobs. I sat down with my wife and I said, I don't think there's going to be a chair for me at the end of the day. So then it was, what do I do? Do I go find another job? Do I go sell real estate? That was tough to swallow at the time because I thought that I was at the pinnacle of my career. I had done a lot of really good work at a lot of different places, including Sports Illustrated. And I was way too young to be doing something else, something that I thought I was among the best in the country at. We looked around. Somebody actually on Twitter said, you should look into this model that they started in Pittsburgh. It's a website called DK Pittsburgh Sports. They had started a subscription model. This is before The Athletic really blossomed. The Athletic at the time was only in about three cities. They had not gotten a lot of VC money at the time. Talked to DK, Dejan Kovacevic, out in Pittsburgh a lot. Talked it over with my wife, put together a business plan. Mind you, I have no business training whatsoever. All my training is in journalism and athletics. We thought that that model could work in Boston, and we're still standing 7 years later. We are making some money finally in the last couple of years, but it's been tough. So no, at no point even then or even now, you know, I never really viewed myself as a business person, that I would own a business, that I wanted to own a business. And I still don't view myself that way. It was just desperation, trying to stay doing what I love to do, what I'm good at. Every year, we look at it and see, is it working? Is it not working? What are we going to do? All that stuff. So that's a simplified version of my career to this point.
An interesting version, because it really showcases the passion that you've had for this practice of writing. And unfortunately, the decay that the industry has been in, as you can tell by the color of my hair, I am somebody who has grown up paying attention on who was writing sports article. For me, it started in Italy with some great journalists like Gianni Brera and Gianni Mura. And then when I moved to Boston, all the regular suspects on the Globe and the Herald. When you decided to make the transition, how much did the experience watching Peter King build his own practice help you in setting up how you were going to run your business?
We certainly had a lot of really good plans at the MMQB. That's who I worked for the first 2 years. Then I transitioned over to the magazine. Peter suggested that I do it. He thought that my future would be more secure at the magazine than at the MMQB, which at that time, we were 2 years into it, and he wasn't sure how much long it was going to last. So he told me to go to the magazine. I went to the magazine, and a year later, I was laid off. The idea of the MMQB was tremendous. Now, do I think the execution was good at it? No, I don't. I certainly took a lot of creative ideas, how to look at things differently, the need to really write something different. And that's sort of the whole idea behind Boston Sports Journal, or BSJ, as we refer to it. It's a paid subscription site. Right now, it's $50 for the year. And the whole key to the whole thing is you need to write something that's different, that's going to get and be impactful to get somebody to take their credit card out and join the site. That's the whole idea behind it. So there was a lot of that at the MMQD. It wasn't a subscription site at the time. Of course, the magazine was. But we really strive to do things differently, look at things differently, and try to attack stories from a different way. And that's certainly what we brought over to BSJ. But there were a lot of things, a lot of missteps we had at the MMQB that I certainly learned from and said, we're not going to do this again. I would say it was a mix of both. Certainly working for Peter, he's been a really good friend to me for many years, being around him, being in the band, going to training camp sites and things like that. Just an invaluable learning experience for me.
What was the process of crafting the editorial strategy for BSJ? You said we wanted to do something different. Did you articulate a few pillars of things that would be unique about BSJ versus some of the other competitors?
It's pretty outdated, and it's been on there unchanged for a long time. I was looking for our About Us page, just going over some of them. I said at the time, because really, DK was doing it in Pittsburgh. What I've since learned that Pittsburgh and Boston, well, at the time, I thought they were pretty similar sports media markets in terms of the passion and blue collar people. Definitely different in that Pittsburgh's media, in terms of newspapers, radio, television, has really decayed. There's only really one newspaper in town. In Boston, it has not. It has probably only strengthened over the years. But and like I said, The Athletic wasn't around. And so at the time, it was really, DK was doing it. It was early. I think he was only a couple years in, but we really had no idea whether this was going to work. Now, 7 years later, you talk about subscriptions. Everybody knows about it, whether it's from what they watch on TV, to how they consume media. There's subscriptions and paywalls all over the place, something that I probably didn't anticipate as much, especially in terms of Apple TV and Amazon Prime and Netflix and stuff like that. There can be subscription fatigue for people. But just in general, we had no idea what we were getting into. I didn't know whether we were going to last one day, 1 year, 2 years. I didn't know anything. I remember clicking the button to basically activate the site, and I was just ready to throw up. I had no idea what was going to happen. And suddenly people popped on there buying a subscription. It was great. We had a great opening run. But what I told people when we started this, I said, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that we're going to change or even alter the Boston sports journalism landscape in one day, week, year, or ever. What I can promise you is that those of us at BSJ who were born, raised, and now proud community members in New England will be working our butts off every day to provide the type of coverage that you deserve, and we'll be listening to you every step of the way. One of our mottos for the site is by Boston, for Boston. We've been high school and college classmates. We've watched our kids grow up and play sports together. Now we're trying to bring you the best coverage of your teams that we can every day. Other things we can promise you, our coverage will be hyper-local to Boston and New England. If it doesn't matter to you, it doesn't matter to us. There's a lot of times with coverage, they send somebody out to write about another team or whatever. The only thing I care about is how things affect Boston sports. No clickbait articles or contrived opinions. This has probably become even more of an issue, I think, in our industry, where because of the adherence to online advertising and getting people to click or getting views, and that increases the amount of revenue that you bring in from Google ads or whatever, it's now in a lot of places, including the Boston Globe. It's not about the quality of work. It's about how many eyeballs are you getting? And sometimes just a stupid opinion can bring a bunch of eyeballs. And some people, that works. For us, that doesn't work. And I think that's the most freeing thing about the subscription model is we're only serving the readers. That's it. We're not trying to get attention. We're just trying to inform our readers. There would be no discussion about politics. We kept that away. We will be interactive and accessible. A lot of Q&As, mailbags, in-game chats. We've done all that stuff. We will not clutter up your experience with annoying ads and autoplay videos. We have brought advertising into the site, so there are some, but I try to minimize it as much as possible, and we haven't gotten any complaints about it over the years. So those were some of the core tenets. 7 years later, I think we've really held strong to all of them.
How has that translated in how you built your team?
That's one thing that has changed over the years. When we debuted, and I knew we had to make a splash in the market because you have the Boston Globe, the Boston Herald, Mass Live is now a big presence that wasn't quite there at the time. You have two TV stations, NESN and NBC Sports Boston, that at least used to, in the case of NESN, used to write about the teams and do video coverage of the teams. The Athletic's in town. There's two radio stations with writers along with their other stuff. It's a saturated market. So I knew we needed to come out and we needed to say, this is going to be legit. And to me, that meant we needed people with experience, people with names that people knew and trusted in terms of how they cover the teams. So when we started, it was myself and Christopher Price on Patriots, Sean McAdam on the Red Sox. He's been covering the team forever. Read him as a kid at Providence Journal. Joe McDonald was a local guy who had been at ESPN Boston, among many other places, on the Bruins. He did a really nice job. We went with a young up-and-comer, Brian Robb, on the Celtics because I just wanted to do things differently. And Brian's gone on to Mass Live. Really, when I started this, and this is probably a lesson that I learned working at the MMQB, is that when I went there, I could have stayed at the Boston Globe for the rest of my career and probably done very well for myself. And in hindsight, that's probably what I should have done. But this was the chance of a lifetime. This was Peter King. This was a lot more money for my family. But I got laid off. And despite a lot of promises from people there that they were going to take care of us and take care of my family, that did not happen. So that has always been at the forefront of my mind. I've never hired anybody away from someplace else because I don't want to feel the guilt of something not working. Look, something could happen tomorrow and the site could cease to exist. You're in a consumer economy, so anything could happen that could affect it. So I didn't want that pressure, at least initially. So I've really concentrated on people who have been let go who were in a similar situation to me. And that was really the idea behind it. Between myself, Christopher Price, Sean McAdam, and Joe McDonald, we had all been recently laid out of work. That and also now younger people, people just out of college, interns, people looking for proving grounds. It's been sort of a mix of both of those.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that you're bringing on younger people. It's interesting to me, you went to Rutgers to study journalism. It was a completely different landscape. For somebody who has an interest in that field right now and is young, how do you see the landscape?
Not good. I can tell you that, Dino, straight out. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I speak to a lot of journalism classes. A lot of young people reach out to me looking for advice, things like that. And probably the first thing I tell them is make sure you have options. Me, myself, I never thought about it. When I got out of school, it was 1997. You never thought newspapers were going away. The internet was just as in its infancy. You didn't really know what was possible. I figured I would have been one of these guys who worked for a newspaper until retirement. So that's what I did. I majored in journalism, mass media at Rutgers. I minored in political science. I wish somebody would have told me at the time. But of course, nobody really knew that this was going to be the future of journalism. I wish somebody would have told me, make sure you have options. Go get a master's in something so you could be a teacher. I have a strong passion for coaching that I've realized later in life. Softball, mostly baseball, other sports as well, through my kids, starting with coaching my kids. Now in hindsight, I wish I had the easy ability to be like, hey, I'm going to be a teacher and a coach somewhere, whether it's high school or the college level. So the biggest thing I would tell those journalism students, I said, first of all, their work matters. And journalism is important. And while I became a sports journalist, I was a trained journalist. When I first got out, my first real job was at some weekly paper, and I covered a bunch of government, local government politics and things like that. That was a real learning experience. Did a lot of that in school as well. Journalism is important, but make sure that you have options. Make sure you have a backup plan. And hopefully you don't have to go to it, but at least it's there. I will say it's getting tougher and tougher for young people, especially in terms of whether they're internships or just getting out of school, in terms of like doing real journalism, Dino. Really, a lot of these young people, they come out and they're on what's called a breaking news desk or something like that. And basically that is rewriting somebody else's news or some tweet or some Instagram. That's not journalism. At least here, we have started incorporating more and more interns on what they're doing, getting their feet wet. Some of it's basic work like game coverage, but I leave it open to them. If they show that they can do the basics and then they want to come and pitch me a story or say, I want to write a Red Sox minor league notebook every Monday or a few of them combined to do it, I'm open to that. Certainly, there's some real primo internships still left in journalism where you're doing real work, but I would say those are coming fewer and farther between. But I'm hopeful, as long as BSJ continues, that we're able to give young people at least a proving ground and an opportunity to show that they can do real journalism and perhaps go on from there. That's probably one of the things that I'm most proud of about BSJ is Chris Price, through his own hard work, after he and I parted ways, he went and worked on the desk at the Globe, and now he's back on the Patriots beat writing. That's awesome for Chris. Great guy, great family. Joe McDonald got hired by The Athletic from us. Brian Robb got hired by Mass Live. Connor Ryan, who replaced Joe on our Bruins beat, is now at Boston.com and Boston Globe. That has happened. So that's been a source of pride for me.
You have spent a lot of time, and our tour centers and still are, on the beat, on getting information from people. What have you learned as a beat reporter? As you said, you broke a lot of news. What has that process taught you that has helped in becoming your own boss and an entrepreneur?
In all walks of life, how I earn the trust of sources, how I guide people who work for me. And I will point out, I am not a hands-on boss at all. I don't really look at myself as a boss. I'm still out there doing Patriots work, and Mike Giardi is working with me now. He was laid off from NFL Network, and I was able to bring Mike on, and it's been a really good partnership for us on the Patriots beat.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I was so excited after he was laid off when I found out that he was coming at BSJ, because I followed him from the NFL Network. Yes. The voice is still here.
Mm-hmm. I was pretty upset. And it seems like an annual thing now with NFL Network where there are a bunch of people, Melissa Stark, some other people were just laid off again with another round. And Mike's a great guy. Really respect his work. He also did a lot of work. And hopefully that he'll be able to contribute to our Bruins post-game coverage as well, because he did a lot of that on the 2011 Stanley Cup run when he has NBC Sports Boston. But that's another example of somebody became available and we made it work. Now, I will point out, before we get back to your question, we did sort of change streams this year at BSJ, and it was probably way overdue. Again, I'm not a business person, but basically, we got to a point where this needed to be better for me financially. I had not taken very much money out of the company for a very long time, and that had to end. We did a member survey, way overdue. I should have been doing that annually, but I did a member survey to find out where people were. We know after this many years, like, this is our income pretty much steadily on an annual basis. Well, how are we going to distribute that? And really, the site is not really for profit. I mean, basically everything that comes in, we spend on coverage, whether that's travel or paying people or whatever. Trust me, I am not getting rich at all on this. And if you wanted to ask my wife, I'm sure she would tell you that, who also, let me point out, has been instrumental in managing the site. And I could not have done any of this without her, including taking the leap of faith that we did. But so we did a member survey, and I was a little surprised at the results. This was even before we hired Mike Giardi, but 75% of the people said they were there primarily for Patriots. I mean, I guess that shouldn't surprise me, but it did. And then it was like 10% Celtics, 10% Red Sox, 6% Bruins. And so I made the decision then, all right, well, how are we going to cover these four sports if we continue it? Because I could have made the decision just to cover the NFL, and that could still happen at BSJ. I don't know. Basically, on an annual basis, we're going to look at it. But that's when I decided, all right, we're going to put more of our assets towards football. We're going to bring Mike Giardi on. Hopefully that will help us. We're going to keep John Corrales, our Celtics guy, who's tremendous, former college basketball player. He's awesome. And I knew the Celtics were going to be really good. So I wanted to keep that up. And then with Red Sox and Bruins, we decided to do something different, where instead of daily full-time coverage, we're going to more like writing three times a week, a member Q&A, and using interns to cover the games, the game coverage and things like that to keep people updated on a day-to-day basis. So far, we're going to be getting towards the end of the year. I think it's worked well. Now we'll see. We'll see what the members say afterwards. But so sorry, I just wanted to point that out. But why don't you repeat your question?
The original question was, what have you learned in the process of covering teams and managing those relationships and extracting that information that has translated and helped you as a business owner, as a leader of your team?
Whether it's running BSJ, whether it's covering the Patriots, whether it's coaching softball, I'm now an assistant varsity coach at the local high school where my kids go to school. I ran my own club team for high school girls, some of whom were going on to play college for about 3 years. It's all the same. And it's just the way I like to live my life. First of all, I'm straightforward. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm just going to come right at you and tell you, like, this isn't good enough. You're doing great at this. I need to see more of this. And I think that that helps when you're blunt with people, being accountable, being truthful with them. And so I try to do that in all walks of life. That's earned me a lot of respect with National Football League sources, Patriots sources, and things like that, that people know I'm not going to play games with them. I'm not going to lie to them. I'm not going to talk crap about other people. And the other thing is just working hard and trying to be tough but fair. I remember it's almost like clockwork. Like anytime people leave the Patriots organization when I covered the team, and these guys were, when Bill Belichick was here, a lot of them were off limits or they didn't talk to me as much as they would have liked. But as soon as they leave the Patriots, all of a sudden I hear from them a text or an email or something like that. And they just say, hey, Greg, I just want you to know, since you're not covering me anymore, I thought you did a really good job. I thought you were tough, but you were fair in terms of the way you covered the team. And I think that the more you show that on a consistent basis, the more respect you garner. And I would also say just a tireless work ethic. BSJ, let's just say it's been a labor of love. I don't think we took a family vacation where I actually took days off from the site until 2 years ago, I think. So for basically 5 straight years every day, I worked in some form or fashion, whether that's editing stories or writing stories or answering complaints or helping with subscriptions or whatever. Rita, my wife, runs the business side of things, keeping the books and things like that. I'm customer service. I'm everything. So I would say a combination of those things, of being straightforward and blunt with people, working hard and being tough, but fair and accessible and accountable. I would say all those things translate.
That's great. So if people want to subscribe, it's Boston Sports with an S, right?
Yeah, bostonsportsjournal.com.
If people want to find you in the social world?
Just Twitter, at Greg A. Bedard, all one word. That's where you'll find me on Twitter. Yeah, that's a whole nother thing and topic of conversation, Twitter and what that's turned into. But it's something I have to do to get the word out about the business and our work.
If you want to play, this is actually coming out the week of the draft. So I want to do some football, take advantage of your knowledge. And I'm going to have actually 6 hypotheticals.
Okay.
You're going to be asked an opinion. Question number one, would Andrew Luck have won a Super Bowl and still be playing if the Colts had decided to stay with Bruce Arians when Chuck Pagano recovered and kept him as their head coach?
False. That team was a mess. The personnel department was a mess. They never got Andrew the protection that he needed on the line. I think his career would have been just as short, perhaps shorter, with Bruce Arians, who has a history of minimizing the need for pass protection and having more people out in routes and things like that, and deep drops and deep balls down the field. It hurt Carson Palmer. It hurt Tom Brady at times until Brady took over and made the offense more to his liking than Bruce's. So I think that's false. I think that Andrew Luck would have still had a very short career.
Okay. If Lawrence Taylor had been a Patriots in the 2010s era, how long would have he lasted before Belichick shipped him off to Arizona?
To where? Did you have a specific place?
I said Arizona, but any godforsaken team.
Wow. That's a great hypothetical. Man, I'm just trying to think of like Lawrence Taylor and his off-field issues. How visible would they have been? Would he have been suspended by the league? I will say that I don't think Bill ever would have shipped him off. It would be interesting. I think he would have realized how special he was. And Bill, you know, would deal with that at times. But in terms of paying him the contract, that's where I have my question, whether he would do that or not. That is a great question. With Brady, he'd have to get... So Lawrence Taylor would be playing with Tom Brady in your hypothetical, and Tom Brady did not take market value. So Lawrence Taylor would not be allowed to take market value. And do I think Lawrence Taylor would have done that? No. So true, I think Lawrence Taylor would have been traded.
Great. How many Super Bowls would Peyton Manning had if he had played for Belichick for his whole career? He has 2.
He has 2, and one, he was the corpse of Peyton Manning being dragged by the Broncos defense to the Super Bowl when he couldn't even throw. That's right, right? That's how he won that Broncos one. I'm not a big Peyton Manning guy, never have been. Could Peyton Manning have operated like Brady did in the early part of the dynasty? Yeah, probably. So I think he wins, maybe not the first one. So he wins 2 in the early part of the dynasty, and I will say 0. I don't think he could have carried the team like Brady. I don't think he could have done what Brady does. So I'm going, he still has 2, but instead of 2001, they went in 2003 and 2004.
Question number 4. Would Brady have won Super Bowl number 7 if he had stayed in New England?
Hell no. Not a chance in hell. Those teams were so bad. It's a miracle that they won number 6, that they were able to go on the run that they did, thanks to Brady, especially the Kansas City playoff game. Brady's throwing down the stretch against the Rams. That was a miracle. They lost back-to-back games in December that year. Nobody thought they were going to do anything, and that they did. That was a miracle in its own. There's no way he would have won another Super Bowl title, especially with him and Bill at each other's throats.
But do you think he would have stayed if he had seen the personnel? If the Patriots had the personnel that Tampa had when he went? Would have you put up with Bill?
To me, the biggest issue was the contract, because Tom was big on respect and Bill was definitely disrespecting him. And a way that you could show a player respect without even communicating with him is giving them a contract extension. Bill never gave him the contract extension. Until he did, that was not going to change.
Would Belichick have won a Super Bowl with Drew Bledsoe if he had never drafted Brady?
No. Bledsoe, by that point in time, and you saw this in the dynasty, I thought Ernie Adams was correct on this, that Bledsoe had been a really good quarterback in the league. He was no longer that way. He was gun-shy, had too many turnovers. Belichick, whether it was Tom Brady or somebody else, they would have been moving on from Bledsoe. Let's say he doesn't get hurt in 2001, probably about 2003 at the latest, they move on from Bledsoe.
Final question. If Belichick was still at the Patriots and running the draft, who would he pick from Rutgers this year?
Bo Melton, the cornerback from my alma mater. But there's a few other guys. There's a running back, a fullback, H-back type. I forget what his name is. I think it's Lundgren or something like that. But a total Bill guy. He would love that guy. He could play special teams up the wazoo too. So one of those two guys.
Okay, fabulous. I'm not going to ask you who you think they're going to pick, because I know that people can read your draft predictions on the Boston Sports Journal and they'll hear you on the radio.
And my podcast.
And your podcast.
The Greg Bedard Patriots podcast.
Yes, absolutely. With Nick Kettles. I'm going to share with everybody, I have been a devout reader, listener of your work. I really enjoy it. I think it's tremendous. And I really like what you stand for with the Boston Sports Journal. So I wish you and everyone all the success. Thank you for coming here.
That's awesome. Thanks so much. And, you know, it's people like you, Dino, that keep it going. I tell people this all the time, and especially when they're surprised that I'm answering their emails to customer support and things like that. But seriously, every little bit counts. And any money that we get, we spend one way or the other on coverage. And I just hope people, I hope they understand how appreciative we are, you know, allowing us to continue to do what we do, which is we just want to cover Boston sports and give people the same coverage that they used to over the years at different outlets, or maybe it's not there anymore, but hopefully we still do it the same way, the same old school way.
Actually, you also do some new school way that is great. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, find a friend who may like it and tell them that they should listen to it. Also, you may have listened to every single episode so far, in which case I am really thankful, but most likely you haven't. So go find a few others and listen to them. As usual, if you really like the show, tell your friends and post about it on social media. Every little bit helps. Make sure you subscribe to the show on your favorite listening platform so you don't miss any episode. And if you listen on a platform that allows ratings and reviews like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Good Pods, please leave us a stellar rating and a review. 5 stars. Stay tuned, because after the credits, I will play a song by Honest Mechanic, the Boston indie folk duo / supergroup made of Paul Hansen from the Grown Up Noise and singer-songwriter Susan Catania. For more information on the episode and all the links, go to the website al4ep.com, spelled with the number 4. You can email me at dino@al4ep.com. Please follow the podcast on whatever social platform you use. On Twitter and Instagram, the handle is @al4edp with the letter D. And on Facebook, look for Authentic Leadership for Everyday People. This episode was produced by me, Dino Cattaneo. It was recorded remotely with Squadcast and edited in Descript, with additional edits by Pro Podcast Solutions. The theme music was composed, produced, and arranged by Nicholas Cattaneo, who also played keyboards and drums with Tony Savarino on guitar and Jesse Williams on bass. And now, here's a song by Honest Mechanic. It's called In This Town.
I love the rumors, if only I could choose them. You don't seem to care if they're true. Whispered stories of all my made-up glory. You told me that a streetlight was the moon. In this town, seeing you around. In this town, it's the same old scene, the same old crowd. I try to make my move, my great escape. I push and pull, but it won't change my fate. We stay the same in this town. Step on a crack, almost broke my back. You thought you caught me in a lie. You brought your love as jury and my judge, digging up the dirt while I cry. Seeing you around. In this town, it's the same old scene, the same old crowd. I try to make my move, my great escape. I push and pull, but it won't change my fate. We stay the same town. Since we're gonna be here forever, we might as well be friends. If we're gonna be here forever, we might as well make amends. If we're gonna be here forever and ever. The same.